Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Remember Palestine with me, Lauren Booth. What is the significance of the increased determination of Israeli authorities to forbid foreign travellers from visiting the West Bank? This week, civilian members of an action nicknamed the Flightilla tried to reach groups in Palestine to experience life there. All were stopped from doing so. I'll be talking to one of the activists who has just been released from an Israeli detention centre after flying into Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, brave doctors continue to find ways to enter the occupied Palestinian territories. So what do they find when they get there? Joining me down the line now from somewhere in Gaza is the surgeon Daniel Shaines. Daniel, welcome to Remember Palestine.
Thank you very much.
I understand that you're operating right now in Gaza. Can you tell me, first of all, the conditions that you and the other surgeons you're working with are operating under right now?
The situation here is not very good, unfortunately. We're working in the basement of a house, trying to help civilians and people who are in need of help. Conditions are pretty bad, quite hot here, and we've got limited supplies, limited light, and obviously conditions are a little bit tough.
Daniel, we're not hearing much news, if any, of attacks by Israel on Gaza at the moment. So what sort of surgeries are you doing? Are you seeing injuries? What's going on now?
We've seen quite a few injuries. In fact, we heard a warplane going over us for over an hour, dropping some shells or dropping something down, creating explosions. It's leaving a lot of the buildings shaken, and we've had a three-story building collapse with families living there that we've been treating. We've crushed it. In fact, some members of the family are still inside the rubble that we're trying to get out. So, it's not good here.
You've actually been to the West Bank very recently, last week. The West Bank, again, activists stopped from going there. Journalists finding it trickier to get to places where reports are needed. What were the Israeli occupation forces doing to patients that you were treating when you were there?
The patients that we saw on that side was we had a lot of young children coming in. One child was actually rolled in barbed wire. I think it was a boy who was about 12 years old. He had lots of puncture wounds to his body, we had to take care of him. But we had quite a few casualties, mainly with glass inside them and the foreign bodies inside them.
Why was there glass inside them? Can you describe, did they fall over? Are these clashes? Is this violent protests from Palestine? Why are you seeing these injuries?
I think there was some kind of, I wasn't actually there. I'm just treating the patients, but I think they obviously got into some kind of scuffle with people claiming to be in charge. So, glass was involved. Smash glass everywhere. There was lots of those kind of injuries or just rubble inside people that had been badly treated and pushed to the ground.
Can you just tell me why, as a British surgeon, do you work in a basement, for example, in Gaza and the West Bank? Why not just go to one of their big hospitals there?
To be honest, it's not as easy as it sounds. We're just here to try and come here and help out and not make it very big, but we don't want any trouble, to be honest, so we're just keeping it quiet and we're just here to help and do our job. But it's been ongoing, it hasn't stopped. We have been working throughout the clock, people coming in and out, and we're just trying our best.
Finally, just tell me about the frustrations that you have, Daniel, as a British person offering aid going to the West Bank. What's your summary of what you've seen this week?
Honestly speaking, I've seen very unfair treatment happening, even to myself. I've had people spitting on me.
Sorry, which people, Daniel? Can you make it clear who's been spitting on you?
Israeli soldiers have spat on me and pushed me over and questioned why I'm here. They haven't been too good to us.
And, you know, again, conditions in the West Bank are sold as getting better. You're not seeing an improvement for life for the people in the West Bank?
No, I'm not. This week has been a very, very busy week. It's been pretty hectic. It's not getting better. We wanted to leave, in fact, but we can't at the moment because of the influx of people we're having. A lot more people are being hurt than I think what's being said. This is not being reported.
Okay, Daniel Shanes from Gaza, thanks very much for that report. Well, a little known fact is that Gaza does have a potentially profitable natural resource, namely gas. Energy expert Peter Eyre spoke to RP about the difficulties of tapping into this resource and improving Gaza's economy.
Beyond any international help that Palestinians could receive, the economic future of the Gaza Strip lies in its own territory.
There's enormous wealth offshore in the Gaza Marine area. There's Gaza Marine 1 and Gaza Marine 2, substantial amounts of natural gas. One would assume that if the gas comes on shore, they would need a massive gas facility to receive it, and then another facility to change it into liquefied natural gas for export. And I've always said that if this was allowed to happen, Palestine could become the mini Dubai of the Eastern Mediterranean.
The reservoir of natural gas has an estimated net worth of approximately $4 billion. The fields are located only 30 kilometers offshore, which means that gas can be extracted and brought onshore very quickly.
It's good that Hamas and Fatah came together, because had West Bank and Gaza separated, technically the gas would belong to Gaza. So the fact they've come together, now they can share this enormous wealth, except to say, as you said, Israel is not going to allow this. If we could bring this gas onshore to Gaza, which the Israelis don't want for obvious reasons, then this puts Palestine in a very, very powerful position.
On the other hand, the fishing industry of Gaza is already in place and can result in an instant return, but the fishermen need to get access to deeper waters. However, for the geopolitics and energy expert Peter Eyre, there is only one option for the Palestinians.
The only way forward is to bring in United Nations peacekeeping forces on both sides of the border, and then maybe build an elevated highway between West Bank and Gaza, because you need to transit quickly to get the economy going. And if that was put into place, you're probably looking at a time frame of up to 5 years. But the gas, of course, is going to accelerate that, because once you open up the gas fields, people pull stops out and they move incredibly fast. To build a massive refinery is not an overnight job, but well within 5 years, I'm sure, is capable.
Well, 500 teachers, doctors and international campaigners for Palestinian justice were due to arrive in the West Bank as guests of local civic groups. The majority, however, were stopped from even boarding planes in their own countries after pressure from Israel on the airlines. However, some did make it to Tel Aviv, but have just returned to the UK, having been held there. Joining me now in the studio is Anne Gray, a Green Party campaigner and one of the flotilla activists held by Israel. And welcome to Remember Palestine. First of all, arriving by plane as civilians from Britain, what was your treatment like when you arrived in Tel Aviv?
We had no real opportunity to explain why we had come. We had no opportunity to assure the border officials that we were peaceful people engaged in a process of cultural and political dialogue. The purpose of our visit was to assert the right of Palestinians to be visited, the right of Palestinian organisations to receive delegations like this for the purpose of discussion, volunteering, solidarity, the exercise of all the normal rights to non-violent activity which you would expect in a democratic state. Instead, we were taken straight from the passport control points after really no effective questioning at all, put into a waiting room, which in Kafkaesque fashion turned into an airport-based detention centre in a matter of hours. We then sat in a hideous prison van with extraordinarily high temperatures and hardly any water to drink for another 2.5 or 3 hours. And then it was jail for 4 days before we were flown home.
So let's talk a little bit about the ethics of this. I mean, if Israel is stopping you visiting without effective questioning, why would they just put you in prison?
They had some notion, or they pretended to the world that they had some notion, that we were going to disrupt the airport. That was definitely not our intention. We did not intend to demonstrate in the airport. We did not intend to disrupt airport procedures. We wanted to get through passport control, reclaim our baggage, and go on our buses to Bethlehem like perfectly normal visitors. That was our objective.
And yet you were never asked what your actual intentions were. What happened then when you were taken to prison?
Before that, let's rehearse the conversation I had with passport control. Why have you come to Palestine? Why have you come to Israel? Mm. To visit Palestinian friends. Where will you stay? What will you do? Name a community centre which had invited us. Okay, stand aside. And then within minutes, upstairs to this waiting room, which gradually became an airport detention centre.
Mm. In the prison proper for 4 days, what was your treatment like there?
We were 6 to a cell. The cells were pretty dirty when we arrived. We pleaded to make phone calls. We didn't get that for 3 days. We basically were given no explanation whatsoever for our detention. We weren't even given the rights, which it was displayed on a notice on the wall. Mm. Detainees in this kind of detention centre should have. We were not allowed to keep our mobile phones with us. We were not allowed to have money with us. We had probably 2 or 2.5, 3 hours in an exercise yard during the whole of that period. And we were locked into cells, not even allowed to move around the corridor, for 16 or 17 hours each day.
And you were 6 to a cell?
Yes.
Women separated from men?
Well, it was all a women's block that I was in.
A women's block. Did you get to meet any of the Palestinian prisoners that were there?
No.
No, you
they separated us completely from the other detainees.
Who was on this trip? Because, you know, the airline companies who stopped other people flying in from France and Belgium and Switzerland and America were told that you were undesirables. Define, please, the undesirables that were on this trip. What's the average age, for example, of this actress?
Well, the average age, I would say, was well over 50. On our group, our flight from Luton, there was one academic still working, 2 retired academics, one of them a Quaker of many years' experience of the peace movement, 2 Christian ministers, a community worker from Scotland, a teacher from Scotland. They were people like this. They were all middle-aged, respectable, grandmother age group sort of people. And the idea that we were undesirable or disruptive, or as Netanyahu said, hooligans, was absolutely absurd.
Yeah, quite. Let's talk about your passport. Did they stamp it deported?
They stamped it entry denied, and I have no idea what the long-term implications of that will be.
Okay. Well, let's go now to our correspondent Hassan Ghani, because he went to meet some of the your fellow activists at the airport. Let's have a look at his report.
It was back on British soil for activists who travelled to Tel Aviv to visit the West Bank. But they arrived at Luton Airport this week without the sense of accomplishment they'd hoped to achieve. Having travelled to Israel in a bid to etch another stroke of solidarity on the Freedom for Palestine campaign, they found their own liberty at stake. Chairman of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Mick Napier, has passed through Ben Gurion Airport and into Palestine 7 times. But this was the only time he admitted on arrival that he intended to visit the West Bank.
We were plucked from presenting our passports and asking to proceed to visit friends. We were attacked, we were shackled, put in leg irons, taken to prison, forced onto an aircraft, and at no time were we informed as to which provision of the Israeli penal code or legal code we had violated. And the truth is, we violated nothing. We were completely legal, clearly legal throughout. I mean, imagine somebody turns up to Heathrow Airport and you're asked by some impertinent official at Heathrow, are you going to visit any Arabs? Are you going to visit any Muslims? Are you going to visit parts of Scotland? And you have to say no. Otherwise, you risk being turned back and sent back to your point of departure. It's absolutely absurd, but this is the unspoken daily routine in Ben Gurion Airport.
But what characterized this attempt by activists to visit Palestine was the even more severe than usual reaction from officials, and it led to a fresh understanding of the extent of the occupation and new avenues by which to combat it.
The defences of the State of Israel's crimes extend now into European airports and elsewhere. To that extent, we can now creatively look for ways to take action to support the Palestinian people here rather than just in Palestine. I think we've discovered that we've found a way to put some pressure on Israel, and we've found a way possibly to put pressure on Western governments to face up to the fact that Israel's maintaining this brutal siege.
So, Anne, as we saw there, people stopped in your group at the point of departure. Have you spoken to those people, and do you feel dented and disheartened by what's happened? Because you failed to reach the Palestinians who wanted to meet you, didn't you?
I think the people we should feel most sorry for are the Palestinians who suffer this oppression hour by hour, day by day, year by year. And when I was in Palestine on my last trip in 2009, it was clear that maybe one in five or one in six of the families amongst the community where I was working had suffered arrest or beating at the hands of the Israeli state. And this is no form of democracy. This is outrageous. We basically need to assert the right of Palestinians to have a normal life and not to be treated as though they were themselves in some giant prison, a prison where they don't have a right to peaceful demonstration, to peaceful protest, which is often attacked with plastic bullets, rubber bullets, tear gas, even live fire. Mm. People are being injured and a few killed all the time just for walking down the street. And I spent some time last year after my last visit raising money for a lad who was shot in the head three times with plastic bullets at very close range on a non-violent demonstration against the siege of Gaza. Mm.
The racism of the arrests and the way people are treated at the points of entry into either Tel Aviv or Allenby Bridge going from Jordan into the Palestinian occupied territories is well known to activists, but can you describe any plucking out of people for their skin colour or religion that you might have experienced?
On this trip, it was noticeable that the young French passport holders of apparently North African origin got considerably worse treatment than the older European descent people. There was a young Algerian woman, I'll call her Algerian, although she was, you know, probably born in France, who was shackled hand and foot when being taken from the airport to the police van, which then took us to the jail. And they threw her into that van, as she described it later, rather like a parcel, and she ended up with lacerations on her hands and wrists and quite severe bruising. Mm. And there were quite a few others who were roughly treated in the same way. So there was obviously discrimination going on within our group between those who appeared to be of what one might say Arab origin and those who were of European origin.
Oh, what about you and Mick, who we saw there, and the others on the flotilla, trying to reach Palestine again?
I would love to go again. I would love to do the kind of things I did in 2009. But I have no idea of what the long-term consequences of having this entry-denied stamp in my passport. I don't know if I will be able to go there again, but I'm determined to help the Palestinian people in whatever way I can, from where I am, which is Britain.
And what do you think, finally, of the effects of activists being stopped from having connections with those? Let's talk about the West Bank for now. What's the effect on the people there?
Well, there have been UN reports that aid work and human rights work is severely jeopardised by the restrictions on movements, both within Palestine and to Palestine, and for that matter, from Palestine. I met some Palestinian friends in Europe last year. A friend of a friend was then trying to come to London to study English. He was denied a visa to come to London for a month. Mm. And I think there is a kind of conspiracy to prevent people from travelling, whatever their nature. I mean, a 40-odd-year-old bank official is surely not a dangerous character. Why can he not have a visa to go to London?
Anne, thanks very much for joining us today. Well, it's time now for our weekly look at international efforts to challenge the misconceptions about the situation in Palestine.
When I say end the siege, you say now. End the siege.
No!
End the siege.
No!
When I say free, you say Palestine. Free!
Palestine!
Free!
Palestine!
Free!
Palestine!
Activists from Independent Jewish Voices in Toronto, Canada, demonstrated outside the Greek consulate against the decision to prevent the flotilla from setting sail.
In preventing the boats from leaving its shores, Greece finds itself complicit in the crippling Israeli naval blockade of the Gaza Strip.
The protesters condemned Israel's libelous accusations against those who joined the flotilla and the diplomatic pressure levied on European countries.
I had a piece of paper.
Campaigners including British musician Roger Waters have condemned new legislation passed by the Israeli Knesset against the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement. The bill, approved on July 11th, bans all advocacy and action to boycott any Israeli companies within Israel and the occupied Palestinian West Bank, Gaza and Jerusalem al-Quds. The US campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel has labelled the law draconian and launched a petition against it. A Venezuelan journalist has released a documentary about the massacre on the Mavi Marmara. Fire on the Marmara by David Segarra, who was on board the ship, tells the story of the flotilla activists from the inside. He spent a year reconstructing the events using smuggled recordings and interviews with survivors and filmed in seven countries, including Gaza, Venezuela, and Spain.
Well, that's all we have time for in this week's programme. I leave you now with photos taken using cameras that were given to children in Gaza. This week's theme is youth. And our thanks to Nada Issa for her work on this project. Goodbye.